Welcome everyone to the Healing from Lyme and Chronic Illness Summit. I am here with Dr. Beverly Rubick, and we're going to be talking about wireless exposure, how it causes unhealthy blood changes that also may be linked to COVID-19. So welcome, Dr. Rubick. It's always an honor to interview you.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Oh, well, I love your work, and you've shared so much of your knowledge and wisdom with me over the years, and you've been really ahead of the curve in so many ways. And, as we kind of dive into our conversation, you have studied wireless technology and the effects of EMR and EMF for some time now, and you've discovered the effects of these technologies on our blood. And so can you just tell us a little bit about what you know as of today about how wireless and EMR, EMF affect our blood?
Yes. Back in 2014, I did a study. It was a pilot study on 10 persons aged 21 to 75. And all of these people had a really good diet because I requested people to have a substantially good diet in order to have good looking blood in the beginning of the study. I was examining their blood at what we call baseline when they come in fasted before any exposure to wireless. And all of them had very good looking blood. The cells were separated and free floating, no sticky red blood cells, no aggregation, and white blood cells that were also moving and healthy and relatively clean blood plasma. I can see all of that in dark field microscopy. And lo and behold, after wearing a smartphone placed in a backpack, turned on but not really used for 45 minutes, 9 out of 10 of these subjects showed dramatic blood changes in terms of red blood cell aggregates, serious piling up of the red blood cells into rouleaux, which are like rolls or stacks of coins, and also more disheveled, disintegrated aggregates, not particularly ordered. And additionally, I had them then use the cell phone for 45 more minutes and looked at the blood again, and I saw further changes, including echinocytes, spiky red blood cells that actually are very unhealthy. They're seen clinically in hematology with liver disease, and so that's the balling up of the red blood cell with spikes all over it. And again, both types of aggregates of red blood cells and these morphological changes and toward echinocytes, those kinds of blood cells cannot travel very well through the microcirculation. Mm-hmm. And so microcirculation would be impaired if this were a chronic condition. And as you know, my study was short term, but people are exposed to wireless throughout their day and sometimes even in the night with wireless devices near bedside. And so it's becoming more and more a stressor in our lives. And I'm looking more recently now at the influence of Wi-Fi routers. Just 10 minutes exposure at a distance of about 6 feet or 2 meters, seeing the same changes with just 10 minutes of sitting near these devices. And people are amazed. In 12 out of 12, I just did another study, all adults, and this was age group 42 to 80, median age about 60, all of them showed dramatic heaps of red blood cells in response to just 10 minutes of sitting near a Wi-Fi router. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised at that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know 10 minutes was going to do it. And even one day when I had my Wi-Fi router on and I approached it just to check something, and then I quickly looked at my blood. I was near that router relatively close, admittedly, but less than 1 minute, and my blood also showed these changes dramatically. So again, people must beware of the influence of wireless on their lives. And not only is it a blood microscopic circulation problem, but the viscosity of the blood increases. When you have long chains of blood cells, it's clear to me that the viscosity of the blood is higher. I can see that. Others have measured it. And that's, of course, causing more difficulties for the heart to pump the blood. And syndromes such as atrial fibrillation can result. In fact, I had several clients who came to see me about holistic counseling, et cetera. And I spoke with them about their wireless exposure, and they admitted they had atrial fibrillation. They were taking drugs or considering ablation surgical procedures, but no one had addressed until me, what about the influence of wireless on this health problem? Mm-hmm. And in one case, a person removed all wireless from their household, went back to wires, and atrial fibrillation went away. And I know there's a literature that also shows that blood viscosity is part of causal aspects of atrial fibrillation. So again, reducing wireless exposure can really help our health and move us toward wellness, but it's hardly addressed these days by providers.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing all that. And that's really shocking, 10 minutes, because when you think about modern life, you know, 10 minutes is, you know, a drop in the bucket, you know, from what people are exposed to on a regular basis. And, you know, we're talking in this context of this summit, you know, healing from Lyme, healing from chronic illnesses. And, you know, a lot of these patients have microcirculation issues to begin with. Their blood is very thick to begin with. There's a lot of vascular endothelial inflammation. And so this feels, and we try to educate, but through this lens and hopefully people hearing you in this moment, like this is essential from recovering from a chronic illness to really have, you know, a EMF protection strategy in their treatment plan so that their blood has the best chance of, you know, recovering. And, you know, we're only as healthy as our blood can flow in our body.
Yes, where the qi goes, the blood flows.
Oh, I love that.
That's Chinese medicine. Well, actually, where the mind goes, the qi flows, and the flesh and blood follow.
Yeah.
And so there's, of course, the consciousness is a part of this, but blood is the flow of blood, and it's delivering food, oxygen, removing waste. It's critical to life.
Yeah, no, I like Tony Robbins, and he says where focus goes, energy flows. And so now I'm going to apply that, you know, to my patient care, right? Where she goes, you know, blood flows. I love that. And it's truth, right? It's a principle, you know, that we need to acknowledge. And, you know, so here you are, you know, with this body of knowledge and information based on your research, and, you know, fast forward, here we are, you know, in the midst of whatever we're going through, but obviously, you know, the pandemic, the, you know, the evidence of COVID-19 that is really wreaking havoc on a lot of people's health. And you published a peer-reviewed paper to really kind of dive in, like, what's going on, right? And finding this link potentially between COVID-19 and exposure to wireless. Can you just share the information you found as you went through this research?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, COVID may come in respiratory tract, but I see it more now as a vascular disease with blood clots forming and things like disseminated intravascular clotting, especially in blood vessels, small ones. And I looked into the literature and saw that in some 1/3 of COVID patients actually show the kind of blood changes that I see with wireless in terms of the formation of rouleaux and red blood cell aggregates when viewed under the microscope. So these may be the ones, of course, who go on to have clots and disseminated intravascular clotting. So, you know, those are the worst cases of COVID. There are milder cases, of course, but we know that that spike protein on the purported virus underlying this disease binds to ACE receptors, which are, of course, in endothelial tissues such as blood vessels and even the red blood cells. There's evidence that the spike protein of the virus can bind to red blood cells themselves and then bring forward these coagulation picture, hypercoagulation, in fact, also with COVID. So the blood changes was one major overlap that I saw right away between my older work of 2014 and this pandemic, as I started reading the literature and learning more. But then I saw other connections, for example, oxidative stress, which being exposed to wireless greatly raises. And also in COVID, oxidative stress is a big deal. And depletion of glutathione, the master antioxidant in the body, occurs both in COVID and in exposure, especially long-term, to wireless. Mm-hmm. So that's another intersection. And there are others, immune system dysfunctions. Sometimes long-term exposure to wireless can completely disrupt the immune system. And it depends on the frequencies, but there's also cases in the literature where it's created hyperimmune responses, very similar again to the cytokine storms observed in some of the more serious cases of COVID-19. So that's yet another one. Mm-hmm. And increases in intracellular calcium, which wireless radiation exacerbates. It opens up voltage-gated calcium channels and calcium rushes into the cells. And well, calcium is a highly regulated entity in our cells because it's almost like a hormone. It's a second messenger that regulates many, many functions. But one thing that viruses like is high calcium because it helps them enter the cell, replicate, and then get out to infect other cells. So actually having higher calcium in the cells as a result of wireless exposure may be exacerbating infectivity, replication, and dissemination of the virus. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there are heart effects. There's quite a literature on how wireless can cause everything from palpitations and arrhythmias to more serious cardiac disorders over the long term. And of course, this is also found in COVID and even myocarditis now with the vaccinations. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I would imagine as a result of the spike protein, again, the toxic piece of the virus. Mm-hmm. So there are just six areas of overlap here that I discussed in my peer-reviewed publication. And more recently, I've been thinking more about the blood effects because I'm doing a study on Wi-Fi and show extremely short-term effects of Wi-Fi from now. The frequency of a Wi-Fi router is 2.45 gigahertz. And by the way, that's the same frequency used in microwave ovens. Mm-hmm. So that can't be healthy. We know you put anything alive in a microwave, it's gone. And it disturbs the water because it's a key resonant frequency at which water absorbs. And of course, water is in every organism, is the essence of life and our blood. We're about 70% water. Mm-hmm. And we start disrupting the structure of that water with wireless. We disturb a lot of biochemical reactions within our cells that depend upon structured water. There's a whole new water science that's telling us about how vital water is to life. It isn't just a solvent for the biomolecules. It plays an active role in living processes. And that's really the state of the art now in water science. And we start disrupting the structure of water with wireless from numerous devices. Think about it. You have a cell phone, you may have a tablet, you have Wi-Fi routers, you may have a smart meter. And there are others. I mean, as we come into 5G, we expect a so-called Internet of Things, where virtually many things that we own are going to be connected to the Internet. And as they are, of course, they're going to be emitting these same frequencies. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be problematic. I see, unfortunately, I think 5G is going to exacerbate all of this, mm-hmm. Not only because of new frequencies, but because of the sheer increase in signal strength with all of these emitters around us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Beverly, you just went through an array of things, right? And I, I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I think of the body in terms a lot of what we call bioregulatory medicine, and part of that is what we call terrain theory. And so, you know, as you're talking and making these connections, I think, you know, what I really want people to understand is in my interpretation of this too, is that our exposure to wireless and EMR, you know, that is affecting our terrain, right? To make us more vulnerable to an exposure to the COVID, you know, SARS-CoV-2 virus or whatever viruses or whatever pathogens that we encounter, given also what you said, the mechanism, you know, with the calcium almost like making them more virulent and able to take hold, you know, in the body. So I think that these connections we have to look at, right? We have to, you know, really educate whoever's listening. And, you know, in my, I'm always inspired by these talks, and I, you know, I know a lot of this, and then I get inspired again to really make sure that I'm, you know, sharing this information as strongly as possible. Cause from what you're hearing, what I'm hearing, it's not like a little thing. It's a big thing. And it's really all consuming at this world, at this time in our world and in our environment.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I must say that I didn't prove any causation with my paper. I'm not saying that 5G causes COVID. Yeah. I'm saying that it's a potential factor. But with all of these areas of overlap in the symptomatology and clinical progression as we understand COVID, we can't help but noticing that it's not just one thing, but it's many things. Mm-hmm. But the blood changes are phenomenal in response to wireless, especially in people over 40. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen such dramatic changes in the youth. So I've concentrated on 40-year-olds and up through the elderly because the biggest changes are in that population. And I don't know whether that's because the young are just more resilient to stressors like EMF or whether they are more adapted to it, because we know that the youth are using it even more than the middle-aged and elderly. They grew up with it. It's part of their youth culture, I think. And so I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't even know how long these changes last. People have asked me, okay, the blood gets practically congealed in 10 minutes. Well, what happens then? And I bring in my subjects for these experiments, they're already 5 hours fasted. Then they go through another hour and a half in my study. They're really rather unwilling to hang around for another couple of hours so we can watch whether the remission of this blood coagulation happens. I think it would, but I just haven't studied it yet. And I do hope to. And that's something we want to do. Another thing we're using this for is to screen for protective devices. So suppose I have a protective device, whether it's a pendant or let's say some kind of subtle energy device that you place in the room. Will it prevent this blood stickiness, blood cell stickiness and coagulation? So I'm starting to look at various devices because I can screen rather quickly with this new 10-minute assay. My other study with cell phones that took 45 to 90 minutes per session was laborious, and I couldn't look at a lot of people or screen quickly. But now I see the potential to start screening very quickly with scientific rigor, of course, with controls to find protective measures against wireless, because I don't think it's going to go away. And I'm not saying that we should remove it from our lives, but we have to become conscious how we use it and how we can let's say reduce our exposure whenever possible, because it surely isn't healthy. That's for sure. There's nothing in the literature that shows microwaves are healthy for you. That I can tell you. Microwaves, especially ones that are pulsed and, you know, digitally pulsed and part of technology, are completely unnatural in the world of life. And life on Earth has never been exposed to such levels of microwaves or their digital pulsation, because we're analog beings. We're more like the sun in terms of our own energy field, which is continuous and not pulsating. And like the sun that has slow changes throughout the day as it travels throughout the sky, we're used to analog signals and we understand them physiologically and react well to them. But when we get something that's pulsed on and off at a very high pace, no living thing can adapt to this. Mm-hmm. We can't. And it's a stressor, like flipping the switch on the lights on and off in some random way. Your eyes would hate it. And you'd say either put it on or turn it off, but don't do that. Mm-hmm. And yet we're exposed to this pulsation that we can't smell or taste or see We're unaware of it, but our body is reacting in bad ways. It's a stressor. And the sympathetic response is turned on. And of course, to have the fight or flight response always on is unhealthy. There's effects of chronic stress that like the rain barrel can only hold so many drops of water. We can only handle so much stress, and any more than that, and like the rain barrel spills over, we break down and we get a disease.
Absolutely. And I want to go into some of those solutions in a moment that you're studying and you want to share. And before we do that, we've talked about, wireless, and we've talked about your studies, and here we are on the precipice of, the 5G rollout, right? So already in certain cities, 5G is already here. And so can you just, it's still, I think, new to people, like, what do we mean by 5G? Do you have a sense of what the bands of frequencies are at this time? And just some of that information, I'd love to learn from you today.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're on 4G right now, the fourth generation of wireless, which really had more frequencies and more bandwidth than 3G or 2G, the second or third generations. With 5G, we moved to a very wide band width. We continue with 4G. In fact, 5G needs 4G in order to work, because 4G is more penetrating through walls and things. But we're going to add frequencies up to 95 gigahertz. Presently, we only go up to maybe 6 gigahertz. So this vast expanse of what are called millimeter waves will be added. In addition to there are really all microwaves, but the higher ones that have the wavelengths the size of millimeters will be added. And there will be many more devices. And I have to say, the engineers aren't concerned so much about health or the biosphere, but they're concerned about crosstalk between all of these frequencies bouncing around out there in the air, whether they might be talking to the wrong devices. That's what they're worried about, because there's going to be so many devices with the proliferation of the Internet of Things. So we can expect maybe a million more antennas blasting us, and something like 100,000 low Earth orbit satellites also blasting the entire Earth, and also base stations, bigger structures. All of that is going to be the 5G wireless infrastructure. Then there's going to be fiber optics, which convey the signal through actual fibers. That would be a good thing if they would make it all the way to your home, your school, and your office. But no, they're going to have antennas right outside in our neighborhoods, giving us the signal into the home. That's the problem, because we can expect the building of antennas as close as every 1,000 feet everywhere. And that's really going to play havoc with our health. So it won't just be what's inside your home and what's maybe aggravating you from your own choices of devices, but with antennas that close to homes and schools and businesses, it's going to be a lot more radiation, plus the higher frequencies. But the most debilitating aspect of whether it's 4G or 5G is this pulsation, this on and off digital pulsation, because the frequency of those pulses really is carrying the information. So it's not just some radio waves or microwaves. It's the pulsating nature of these digital fields that are so unnatural and so stressful. And the closer they get, the stronger they are on us, the closer the source is. And therefore, we're going to have even more radiation, plus new frequencies. And we have no idea how these things are going to impact our health. You know, Senator Blumenthal held a Senate hearing on this a couple of years ago, and he brought the telecom industry and he asked the question, have you tested 5G for any health effects? And they said, no. They're going on the FCC, the Federal Communication Guidelines. They've never set safety standards. And those guidelines are from 1996. And they haven't even reviewed the literature over some 20 something years to update them. And we certainly don't have safety standards. And also, I would say the United States and Canada have the highest levels of exposure in the world. We permit that as our legal limits. And they're right up there, right underneath what's called thermal damage or thermal effects, which would be the tissue heating. Because unfortunately, in the West, we've ignored the possibility of non-thermal effects, effects that go deeper as these frequencies in within the range of the biofield itself, that's the pulsation frequencies, can be so disruptive to our own energy field.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's what 5G will bring. And sadly, we don't even have research on real world devices.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to implement this worldwide. It seems like we're getting the cart ahead of the horse here.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me we need a moratorium on 5G. And we take a look at this in cell cultures and animal models with real world 5G devices, like real world 5G phones and 5G routers and other whatever will be 5G frequencies. And we test them and see what's going to happen before we implement this, because it's also a terribly huge expense. It's going to be trillions of dollars. And once it goes up there, I don't see it changing anytime soon. So it would be the wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, more than wise, right? And, you know, as you're talking and, you know, I don't know if you did this in your kind of observational, you know, kind of like research, if you looked at cities or if anyone has yet, the cities where there has been a 5G rollout and, you know, COVID cases, do we see a link yet or is there?
Oh, yes. Well, I didn't do that research, but it was done by several others. And the first thing we all noticed was that Wuhan, China was one of China's model cities where 5G was completely turned on. I think it was October 31st, 2019. And then we understand the first cases of COVID came in December 2019. And so, you know, and then we noticed, and it's been published, a statistical significant relationship between the places where 5G had been already partly rolled out and how where COVID-19 pandemic first began, namely South Korea, New York City, Seattle, Silicon Valley, Southern California, Northern Italy, and there are others. And there are, in fact, maps. There is a map that the Johns Hopkins University put out of the initial spread of the pandemic over time, in fact, and we can look at where the 5G rollouts are from other data, and we could see a perfect correspondence. So I think it was probably involved, especially in the early part of the pandemic, exacerbating symptoms and making people weaker so that they would come down with the virus. That's my take on it, and we did mention that in our paper, but it's circumstantial, it's not causal evidence, but the overlap of the placement of COVID patterns really coincides with 5G rollout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm not surprised in any way in that, you know, makes a lot of sense. And I think people can only, you know, as people's awareness opens and they really understand, you know, the science behind the effects of wireless, the effects of 5G, and, you know, that overlay on top of COVID, like, you know, we're always about like, why are people more vulnerable than others? You know, that this has, you know, in my opinion, this is a very likely factor, and it makes a lot of sense. And I guess, Beverly, what, I mean, now you're studying solutions, right? Because here we are, you know, I hope that we change the course. I hope that information, you know, gets exposed and people can really understand that this is something very serious that we need to look at. But in, you know, in the meantime, right, because it's still, you know, modern life, we're still very much exposed. 5G, I live in a city where, you know, 5G is here. And so how can we protect ourselves? What have been some of the things that you've been really excited to see a positive result in mitigating some of the stress at this time?
Well, let me say that I'm just getting started on this research, but I haven't found anything that's 100% protective.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who walk around and they have some sticker on the backside of their smartphone and they're absolutely convinced that then it's safe to hold the phone to the head. I'm sorry, I'm not convinced.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen, you know, peer-reviewed double-blinded studies on anything that's convincing me. So I hope to do some of those, and I'm just getting started. But even so, I haven't found anything protective to that extent yet. I think we need to take multiple measures to protect ourselves. And one of them is a simple thing is to put your cell phone on airplane mode and turn off the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth if you're not using it, because all of those are signals blasting you. Now, then your phone won't ring or ding or make any sound when someone texts or calls. But then you could turn it on periodically and look and see who contacted you, and you could contact them again, and then turn it right back on airplane mode for your own safety. Mm-hmm. And certainly don't put phones in your pockets or your bra as a woman, because especially if it's not on airplane mode, because you're really blasting your body. If you could read the manual on your smartphone, it says you must keep the phone at least 1 inch from your body. And that 1 inch means a big difference, because the radiation just falls off with distance exponentially. So the 1 inch, it drops dramatically. And that means you might hold it out here, or better yet, speakerphone, or using earbuds. The cell phone is certainly the most, let's say, the most hazardous piece of wireless equipment that most of us now use. But I would say number two is the wireless router. Where is it in your home or your school or your office? In the study that I'm doing, people are telling me, well, actually, my router is right next to my computer. It's right on my desk. Mm-hmm. Not a good situation. Move that router as far away from regions where you spend most of your time, in the home, in the business, and in schools. You don't want it near you at all, because it's a much bigger emitter, more powerful than a cell phone. Mm-hmm. And the smart meter, well, you can, if you have one of these, you might be able to get a regular analog meter, or you might be able to put it in a cage. There are special devices to shield your smart meter from you that look like fine wire, a screen, and that will keep the microwaves inside and not getting out. There are certainly clothing that you can wear that's shielding, from hoodies to t-shirts to protect your major organs to a variety of things. And there's lots of websites selling these with silver threads inside that act as a screen to keep out the microwaves. I've tested some of them and they're not 100%. In other words, some radiation still gets through, but a lot of it is screened out. And so you can, maybe the future of clothing is going to be silver threads in all of our clothes to keep us safe from microwaves.
Yeah, you know, that that is a thought. And I've been seeing too, there is a company, I think it's called Belly Armor for women who are pregnant, you know, that they can have the camisoles that, you know, protect their growing baby, which, you know, that's, I mean, there's many travesties to this whole situation, right? But I think a lot of what we see is the young children and the young developing brains and the, you know, the babies in the wombs and even preconception, right? With the rise in infertility. So this is, this is impacting our future in so many ways.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's a very smart thing. In fact, I became aware of these aprons in China that women are wearing. Actually, they're more like jumpers because they cover the breasts too. So they go all around the body, and they're thick shielding. So because the developing organisms are really the most vulnerable, the fetus in the womb, but also young children.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, with wireless at schools and, you know, the children's exposures at schools, we have to, you know, we have to, I interviewed it as well, Beverly Peter Sullivan, who I know you know as well. And he gave a lot of different, you know, tools and tips as well because of, the wireless environment for the children in schools are something that a lot of us don't have much control of yet, you know, and so how to protect the kids. And I think the clothing is a good, you know, option, and, you know, speaking with the teachers, at least the knowing where the Wi-Fi router is in school, you know, all of these things until awareness increases. So Beverly, this is fascinating. And, you know, you published this paper, right? It's peer reviewed. And Tell us about your experience of getting this information. And, you know, you have been a scientist for decades now, right? And
Yes, some 40 years.
Yeah, so it's, so this time is a unique time, I think, that you have never experienced, you know, information being so censored, for lack of a better
word. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So can you share your experience?
Yes. You know, we wrote this paper, it was a year ago, we were done. And trying to put it on a preprint server, which is just a place to put it online so people had access, especially during the pandemic, a lot of papers on COVID were going up on preprint servers before they were published so that people could read them and we could respond to this pandemic. Well, I had trouble finding a preprint server that would take it based just on the subject matter. And they just, you know, I spoke with agents of those preprint servers, and they said, we're not going to take it. And I was flabbergasted. Finally, I found one that took it. And then I was trying to find a journal to publish it. And I have over 90 publications. I know how to write papers. And this has not been my problem. And now we had several rejections. Again, not peer-reviewed, but just based on the subject matter. Mm-hmm. It was somehow being censored. It's not, you know, you're not allowed to talk about things that aren't officially part of the narrative that is given to us by the Center for Disease Control and the WHO, the World Health Organization. They are the organizations giving the official information, but anything else is not permitted. And even something that would go along with standard epidemiology, like let's talk about environmental factors in the pandemic, because there are always environmental factors in every disease, along with the health of the host and the agent or the virus. There's this epidemiological triangle. So why is it we can't talk about that? Why can't we have a discussion on this? And why can't it get in the literature so we can begin to think more about this? And if it plays a role in the pandemic, then to take measures, because we haven't relieved this pandemic and it's been 2 years. Mm-hmm. Have we taken the right measures or sufficient measures? We should be asking ourselves, because it seems to me the sole measure was vaccines and not early intervention, not looking at environmental factors, or if we did, we waved them aside and it wasn't sufficient. I think we could have had an intelligent conversation with many contributing scientists and medical doctors to formulate a better way to go to handle this whole situation. And it's really disturbing. And I just saw a small piece of that with my own. But to get back to my paper publication, so we finally found a journal who did the peer review. And the peer review was extraordinary. It wasn't just 3 to 5 reviewers, which I'm used to. No, I understand the journal asked 48 peers to review it. Wow. When I heard that, I was flabbergasted. Never in my life have I heard of that. And 12 of them responded and did review it. And then there were 3 rounds of peer review. In other words, it was extremely stringent. And we wrote a rebuttal to each of the 3 rounds. And all of that is published. And I'm glad to see that. The questions from the peer reviewers and our responses, 73 pages. Additional. It's practically a book between my paper of 20 something pages and 73 pages of peer review and rebuttal. It's practically a book, but there it is. And I'm happy the journal published it because everybody can see the struggle. It's there for all.
Mm. Well, no, that took a lot of time, dedication, and, you know, staying the course, right? Because there's a lot.
There was no certainty. That we would get published. And I was surprised that the editor allowed 3 rounds of peer review, and normally no more than 2.
Right.
Because they were asking new questions on the 3rd round, which, you know, should have been asked early on. Mm-hmm. And so that really wasn't fair, but at least we made it through and it stands. Yeah. So I'm happy with that. And I would say it made us a stronger paper having the peer review so stringent as well. We toned down our language a bit. We clearly said this is not about causation, but this is to open up discussion on this. And we proposed experiments that could be done, for example, with animals, to look at the relationship between the virus and the Wi-Fi. the wireless radiation in exacerbating an infection. For example, in humanized mice, these would be mice to which, let's say SARS-CoV-2, if this is the active the agent, they could be infected, and we could do some cages with wireless exposure and some without. And we could take a look at the extent of disease, the severity, death count, et cetera. So it all could be studied, and it wouldn't cost that much money. But so we put it forth in our paper to show causation would require something like that.
Well, no, but, you know, lively dialogue and a lot of, you know, opportunity, right, to go deeper. And I, you know, applaud you for your effort, and I'm full of gratitude that you stayed the course and that this got published. And yeah, there's so much still opportunity for us to go deeper and to really learn, you know, more about this. And I hope as we realize out there of so much that's not working, that, you know, people start to, you know, ask those questions, why? And, you know, this is a big why, big root cause in my
opinion. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the fact is it's almost 2 years now since the pandemic began. Well, it's even more than 2 years, but here in the US. And you know, we don't see any mitigation. In fact, there are more cases than ever. So we're here.
Yeah, we have to look.
So have we taken the right measures? Mm-hmm. And if not, why are we not having a discussion about all of the factors and what else can we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that is a conversation that we can continue to have and people open up to that idea, you know, especially as we record this in 2022. So I very much hope that to be the case. And in the meantime, you and I will keep asking these questions and keep doing the work. So Beverly, as we wrap up our conversation, is there anything else on your heart or your mind that you want to share with the audience?
Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything. Thank you. It's been a great opportunity. I'm really grateful for this this opportunity to speak about my work and my concerns about this pandemic, and also about 5G, because right now we're on the threshold of a greater rollout. So we hear of 5G infrastructure between satellites and antennas. And I say we need a moratorium. We need to stop this and do the correct experiments to find out about health effects before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Beverly, if people want to learn more about your paper, your research, you know, all the things that you're up to, where can people learn more?
I have two websites. One is brubik.com, brubik.com, and the other is frontiersciences.org. And of course, I have a fair number of lectures and things online as well that are accessible.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all of your work. And it's always lovely to spend time with you. And I really appreciate you being on the summit.
Thank you so much, Christine, for all your good work, too.
Thank you.